So I want to touch on some of the since this week's parasha, Truma talks about building the Beis Hamikdash, building the Mishkan. And we know there's a concept of mura and kavod to the Mishkan. You have to have respect and give some type of awe when it comes to the a person would enter the Mishkan with trepidation. But interesting in halacha, it transfers not only from Mishkan, it transfers into a shul, the basic kinesis as well. Mishmar the Chafetz Chaim, in his introduction to Hilchos Chafetz Chaim, so he talks about the potential multiple things that a person did wrong. When he says lashon hara, one of them he says, if you say it in shul, you're over the mitzvah say the raisa of having mura and kavod to a shul. So he brings there the opinions which pass, and that is the raisa. So that we transfer this concept from the Mishkan, which is clearly in the Torah, and the Mikdash, into a Mikdash Ma'at, which is a Pasuk in Yechezkel, that it says, Ve'ahilohem Mikdash Ma'at. So this concept is transferred from the Mishkan into a shul. And the Chofetz Chaim is passing Halacha L'maisa, that's how we pass. And there is Prima Gadim sees it as a Durabanan. But the Mishabur is passing, the Chofetz Chaim is passing on to the Raisa. It's interesting, Ramosha possibly goes somewhere in the middle, and he says that possibly eating and drinking in a shul, which is prescribed, we'll talk about whether it's, or why it's permitted, eating and drinking in general, he says that might only, that's a minimal type of lack of respect. That would be Drabonon. But something of more significance, what's called Kalos Rosh, a person is, just hanging out saying jokes in the shul, that would be a deraisa. And Rishon Zalman has that same type of idea also. Rishon was talking about a chuba, it was a fascinating chuba. He was talking about, question was bringing a seeing eye dog into the shul. So he started talking about the halachas of what type of respect we have to have for the shul. And he came out that it's permitted. He said it might be proper to maybe have the person sit off to the side so people would just be thrown by having this dog there. But he says he was permitted because that was not, he didn't feel that would meet the threshold of being problematic.
Maybe is that specifically by a dog? The whole idea of selling a dog, or is it just by animals in general?
Well, the question was he was starting with the discussion. He went back to one of the Rishonim talked about bringing a chamor into the shul, bringing a donkey into the shul, and he actually had a gemara which talked about that Abaya, when he was young, his parents passed away when he was very young. The person who raised him, it trained a sheep to accompany him, so apparently the sheep used to come to him to yeshiva, right? So as Abaya had a little lamb, right? Abaya had a little lamb. You know where the song came from. It went with him to shul every day. Went to yeshiva with him, and it was apparently it was permitted. Ramosha says so. You see that such a thing exists. I mean. Okay, I know that Gemara. Why did I think? I never thought about thinking about the halachic implications of that Gemara of Abaya. He said, well, obviously he went with him to Shiva because what Abaya do in his day? So he had this sheep coming in, and maybe kept him outside. I don't know. But he assumed that it came inside. So let's go through some of the different halachas. The Mishabura in Siman Mem Vav says, but before a person walks into a shul, so a person should stop and think about the significance of the idea of walking into a place of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence. I have to tell you that just maybe move out of the halacha for a second into the emotional sense of it. And we're always looking for ways to enhance our davening. We wish our davening would be more serious, etc. Now imagine that we would all keep this halacha, all these halachas, and we would deal with the shul with a totally different type of respect and level of respect, etc. I believe there'd be a concept of going into a zone. You'd walk into the shul, and your natural instinct would be to go into a different zone of thought. It's a place where nobody talks, a place where nobody does anything else but just pray. And if you do that, I think you would have a whole different, it would help our tefillah. I was once in a shul in Deal, New Jersey, as a matter of fact, where there's zero. Some people drive to shul on Shabbos, but to talk at shul on Shabbos, they kill you before they let you talk at shul on Shabbos. It's total silence, total respect, and you walk in and there's an emotion, like you feel like you're walking into a different type of a special place. So it's so the Chofetz Chaim says before you walk in, a person should stop and have the moments of awe before he walks in of what he's about to do. And then he continues, he says it's a mitzvah to run to shul, or if you have arthritis, try to walk as fast as you can. But what? It's mitzvah to run to shul.
Literally run.
Mitzvah to run to shul. But he says, well, once you're in the shul, you're not allowed to run inside of the shul. Once you get to the shul, you have to walk. You're in the I'm coming to the presence of the master, but now I need to stop. Now I'm there. I'm in the presence of the king. You don't run in the presence of the king. You carry yourself properly. Shulchan Aruch, then that's in Siman Mem Vav when he talks about getting into this Birchas Hashachar, etc. That's how you walk in the shul in the morning. That the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kufin Aleph talks about the Lach of Kedusha Beis Knesses. So he talks about there's an issue of Kalos Rosh and Schoik. You can't be making jokes and hanging out in the shul. There's an issue of Sicha B'Tela, of having a conversation which is not, which the Mishabur points out, means even if it's a purpose of Parnasa, which Parnasa, we encourage Parnasa, it's a good thing, right? You learn some in Reish Memches, and it says that going out, a person who's making arrangements to travel on a ship, so vis-a-vis Shabbos, even if you're going for Parnasa purposes, it's mutter, because going for Parnasa is a mitzvah. Supporting your family is a mitzvah, but not in shul. That's not the conversation should take place in shul. The Aruch HaShulchan raises the question that we seem to not be careful about this, and we need to explain why. We'll never get back to that.
You can talk about it on Shabbos, but you can't talk about it in
shul. Theoretically, on Shabbos, you can make arrangements, okay. So I'll get back to that maybe. Shila Shalom, greeting somebody is considered proper, so that's not Sicha B'Tela, that's important. So greeting somebody is a very important thing to greet somebody, to the point that doesn't mean just say hello, hello, but you can have a conversation with the person. How are you? Are you feeling okay? What's going on? That's would be go under the umbrella of Shila Shalom, and that's something which is encouraged. So there should be somebody, the idea, our shul should be friendly, but so you have the balance. Eating and drinking inside of a shul, this is always the question. The person brings his yard site, he brings something in the back over there for the yard site. So the straight halacha says you can't eat and drink inside of a shul. What it does talk about is that for tzarach sudas mitzvah it's permitted, and then the Moshe, questions, is this called a sudas mitzvah? What's the threshold of a sudas mitzvah? You're making a l'chaim for the chsidim. All the chsidim made a l'chaim. He didn't feel that would meet the threshold of sudas mitzvah. So we have to explain. So why in the world are we going to be allowed this? So there's a Gemara. The Gemara says, when if you originally build the shul, you build it, making a condition that you're maintaining the right to use it for other purposes. So there's a concept called Tanai. So there's three opinions in the Rishonim how Tanai works. The Tosfos and the Rosh say that Tanai does not allow you to do anything when the shul is standing. What it allows you to do is after the shul, if the shul is ever destroyed. It loses, so there are limitations on the place where shul was. The Tanai will work for that. Once the shul is no longer there, you can use the property wherever you want, but it will not work while standing. That's the opinion of the Tosfos and the Rosh. The Shulchan Aruch passes like the Tosfos and the Rosh. Okay, the Ramban says that it works while it's standing in the case of necessity, and Rashi says that it works when it's standing. Even without, makes it totally mutter. So the Rashi says apparently the minhag Yisrael has become to follow Rashi. And he says, so we have to assume that that's what we're doing, and that's where he goes and continues. That once that's true, so he doesn't feel that achilah v'shtiyah, which we're allowing on a shul, would be any less problematic than bringing in the seeing eye dog. That's why he's about to the seeing eye dog. That's a Marsha Shuba.
So do we assume that every shul is built on that?
Now, so the Mishnah Berurah says it only works if you say explicitly when you build it that there's a Tanai. That's what Mishnah Berurah says. We would hope that most people are aware of that, but the probability is that those who argue that nowadays it's so common to make this expectation, we almost have a unspoken, obvious considered Tanai that you put some type of condition when you build it for that purpose.
For purposes of this discussion, what's the definition of a Beis Knesses? In other words, you have most shuls have multiple rooms. And there's one room which is the place where the Arat HaKodesh is,
right,
the oven.
Well, let's just say the sanctuary for sure. The question would be, in your scenario, if people, there are minyanim which sometimes spread to the other rooms, what status does that confer upon them? If you have another room which is used for the social hall, you're great, But well, we dive in the social hall sometimes. Does that do anything to us? That's really where the question gets more complicated. But it's not the whole building. It's the place where you dive in is the rest of the building is fine. That's clearly would have a din of a better than a Tanai.
So a lobby, social hall, right. Generally speaking, wouldn't apply there.
Right. So the question is, you start using they had in Europe, sometimes you would have a minion in the lobby. The Polish, they call it. They would have the minion of the Polish and minion of this. And the, so, if it's kavua there, that becomes a regular basis. They do that. So some places raise the question that you'd have a limitation. So again, we would have this heter tonight. To go into shul for something other than davening, you know, so it's really hot outside and the shul air conditioning has great air conditioning. So I want to go into the shul to cool down for that purpose. You're not allowed to use the shul for that type of purpose. Mishabura's Masha, even with making it tonight, but you know the once you're in shul for the valid purpose of using the shul, so we're not going to limit you. You're allowed to eat, you're allowed to drink, but I can't just use it. What you have to do is you have to make a shul function out of it. Learn something while you're there. Daven something while you're there. So you made a shul function out of it. You can't use the shul for a shortcut. You know, you had the shortcut before the shul was built, which you know not so common. But if that would be the situation, it would be mutter. You can't sleeping in a shul. Even a light dose, a person should not do inside of the shul. A person should do that, go outside to do that. Person walks into the shul, a person should remove the dirt off of his feet before he goes into the shul. Shul Chanaruch says a person should remove the dirt off his feet before he walks into a shul. If he obviously would mean he shouldn't dirty it, and if he sees something which is dirty there, he should remove it. So this interesting question, so I'm going to start cleaning up the, is there an issue of it doesn't befit my honor that I should be cleaning up the shul. So I have a story that Rebbe Meir Bloch, in those days people used to smoke, so he would, you know, he would clean up the cigarette butts from the floor. Of course, there's always one of the stories which always goes with it is that there's one time a bucker, you know, came over and tried to make a joke out of it, like, you know, Rebbe, if you need a cigarette, I'll give you one. You'll take it, but that wasn't a smart move. He did not appreciate that type of humor. No, he did not. On Purim, maybe. But obviously, he held that that's not considered beneath his dignity to clean up the shul. Mishabur talked an interesting question about walking into shul with the boots. And he says you should not walk in the shul with wearing boots, unless it's a place where you'd be willing to stand in the presence of a very, you know, important personage wearing your boots. You come in the shul, you dress properly, so that includes your shoes. So, I guess in the very, very difficult cold weather, what they used to do, I mean, I'm not sure if they have an extra pair of shoes or something with you, but apparently he would suggest that such a thing.
What about on, Yom Kippur and Shabbat? I mean, most people don't like have nice non-leather
shoes. I guess you'll do whatever, you know, you got to do whatever you got to do, you know. In that situation, I don't think you have a choice to do anything better than that. The Rambam says that a person's in a shul, a person should not kiss his children. Now, the language of the Rambam is a person should not kiss his young children, b'shas ha'tfilah, to instill upon us the awareness that there's no love like the love we have for our Creator. That's the language of the Ramah and Mishnah Berurah explanation of it. So it sounds like if the children are older, or it's not your children, so the Kavach Haim says you want to kiss a friend, it would be permitted. It's only children. Ravad Yosef has a tshuva where he says that's not so. He feels that it applies even to friends as well, which means even applies to somebody who's not a child. But then he moves the question, was they had a custom that after a person would get, their parent or chacham would get an aliyah, they would kiss the chacham's hand, or they kiss the father's hand, the children would kiss the father's hand when he would come back after the aliyah. He said, that's permitted. Because that's to show respect for what the Torah wants us to show respect for, so that's permitted.
As opposed to affection.
As opposed to affection. So then, Zilberstein has an interesting question that, he was learning with his son, and the son asked this wonderful question, and he wanted to show his son, so he gave his son a kiss. So somebody said, you can't give your son a kiss in shul. He says, I'm not kissing him for affection. I'm kissing him to show how valuable the Torah is. So he asked Rizal the question. He said, listen, if you'd be living with somebody else's son and you'd react the same way, then it's permitted. Because then your point is you're showing the love of Torah. But if it's your son, then it's an expression of affection. It says, and he felt that would be not necessarily be such a good idea. Okay. Let's move into the just one thought about the parsha. So, starting from parshas Truma, Tetzava, a little bit of Kisisa, and Vayakha Bikude, the Torah goes into tremendous detail about how to build the Mishkan. Quite extraordinary type of detail. You don't find anywhere else. So, just the Kuzari says that what's the message? What is the point of saying over here? It says every religion it claims to allow man to reach God. Allows man to touch God, right? He says, but the only religion which has such level of detail is ours, because there's no way for a human being at the final result to figure out how to reach God. The only way you can reach God is by him telling you. But for the human mind to think that he's smart enough to know exactly what God wants from him. So he says, so the fact that there's details, at first glance, like, what's the difference? You know, is it this big or that big? You know, so is it, if it's 10 feet long or 10 and a half feet long, right? What's the difference? I would take it a step further. Like, every single thing which we do in life, which is real, there's tremendous details. And any lawyer sitting over here, you draw up a document, you know, everything is details. Right? You're a construction, you're building a building, and there's details upon details. You're writing a flyer, you're making advertisement, then you sit there and you contemplate, is this exactly what we want to say? How do we want to say it? This word, that word? Everything is always details. There's nothing which we do which is not detailed. Person goes into surgery, says, cut here, cut there, what's the difference? You know, like, we don't do that. We don't, like, you know, I would like you to work out beforehand, we think about it, we plan, and then we execute perfectly. Anything which is real is details. The reason why we wonder about religion, why there's so many details, is because, like, the main thing about religion, it's just a feeling. It's just an emotion. Well, you know, feelings and emotions, you don't really have to have details for feelings and emotions. And that's where the mistake is. But the point is, it's not feelings and emotion. There is a plan, and there's a system which allows a human being, together with emotion, because the more says, Rachmana Liba Boy, you need to have emotion as well, to do and to connect with what is real in this world. The Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence in the world is a real thing which you want to connect to. But you can't do it with a little of this, a little of that, it'll work out. God doesn't mind, you know. Do you think God really cares about, I don't know, but he said he did. So I'm not going to impose my thought process upon him. I'll let you hear what he has to say. But if we understand that it's real, we say, well, probabilities, there is going to be details. If it's something which is like, whatever, it's just a feeling, that goal is to have a good feeling, a good emotion, then it's going to be, well, we sort of lose that thought process. A person's, even a chasna, you know, you have party planners, and you have your event planners, and you have details, and, you know, coordination, etc. Everything is coordinated. It's perfect. So I think that's the bottom line of the message over here, is that it's challenging us to look at what it means to reach our Creator and connect to our Creator in another way, which will force us to stop and think, you know, what is he interested in hearing from me, as opposed to what would I like to impose upon him.